This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
Thanks. Well, hello, and welcome to this third week of St. David's Observation of National Poetry Month. I was telling Mona earlier, is it okay if I move this aside? I feel like it's a, like a second person. I was telling Mona that it was really lovely to be back here. I spend a lot of time at Seminary of the Southwest, and I'm a parishioner at St. James. But long, long ago, when I began my journey as an Episcopalian, migrating here from a different tradition, it was St. David's that I first stepped foot on, coming to a class on literature and spirituality taught by Patty Spire, who was a member here at that time and went on to become the director of Seton Cove. So I really trace my lineage within this faith tradition back to this holy ground, and I'm really thrilled to be here. So the title of today's session is Grounding for Creative Practice, and I have to apologize to Mona. We're not going to be looking at lots of different kinds of poetry today. We're going to be taking a step back and asking ourselves how it is that we prepare ourselves to do creative work of any sort. Poetry, you might make art of another kind. You might garden. You might enjoy making music, either alone or with others. And we're going to talk a little bit about how to move into the space that allows us to do that work with freedom, with joy, and with less kind of cerebral static or interference from our inner critic and from the expectations of the world. So I hope this is a time for you just to simply remember that moving back into our heart energy and connecting with the earth, which is an appropriate thing to be doing on Earth Day. Happy Earth Day, by the way. Sorry, it's a little chilly out there to be celebrating Earth. But I do hope that this is just a reminder that when we feel the desire to create, that taking a pause and connecting ourselves to the entire created universe that begins in the spot where we sit or stand is one way to open up that creative energy. And we're going to talk a little bit about poetry too, but because I like to operate inductively rather than deductively, I'm going to ask you to start with a little writing, and also because I teach writing, so I always ask everybody to write. And they see me coming, and they're like, they either run or they get out their journal on campus. So if you don't have your own journal, you do have your journal, take it out. If you need something to write with, please grab one of the notepads, or I can hand one to you. Just anybody need one? Okay, great. And what I would like you to do is just write for 4 or 5 minutes in response to this very simple question. You can answer it any way you like. Let's see if we can find the question. Not advancing. There we go. Have to do it manually. So pre-write for 5 minutes about where you are. Okay. Wrap up the thought that you're working on. And then you can just set that aside for now. We're going to return to that a little bit later. So one of the questions that comes to my mind, or came to my mind while I was thinking about this session and preparing for the session, is why are folks in a church community thinking about poetry? Why are we talking about poetry? Why is National Poetry Month, and why Earth Day is being observed in a church setting as a whole? It's not a whole nother subject, but it's very related. But what is it about poetry in particular that feels fitting? And I'm not asking that only rhetorically. I'm kind of curious to hear what you think, just off the top of your heads. Why is it that poetry is an appropriate subject for the communities of the faithful to be engaging? Any thoughts? I know that's very general, but what comes to mind? Introspection. Thank you. Poetry is an invitation to turn inward, to reorient ourselves toward the wisdom, the revelation that comes to us through not only our minds and our imaginations, but through our bodies. Any other thoughts about why we're doing poetry in church? Yes, sir. Yes. Poetry is a gesture. The liturgy is a collection of gestures. Poetry has movement, it has body. Mary Oliver, who we're going to talk about in just a moment, says that early in her life as a poet, she set up a few rules for herself and the poetry she produced. And she said every poem she writes, she wants to have, or I'm using present tense, rest in peace, Mary Oliver, but literary present. She wants every poem to have a body, to have a visceral presence. She wants every poem to be sincere, so to have an energy of honesty. And she wants every poem to ask a question. And I know last week with the help of Sharon and Kathy Capers, if you were here, you talked about the questions that poetry can ask us and help us ask ourselves. But that she wants poetry to have a body is her point of connection, and our point of connection is the folks interested in poetry with faith and our life as people who put our bodies and open all of our senses to the experience of the transcendent. Any other thoughts about poetry in church? Yeah. Yes, we do. Thank you for, as a representative of the male contingent, for reminding us that we like to express our emotions. No subtext there about my husband's inability. And poetry allows us to do that in a way that is sort of focused, connected to an image, sort of contained. It's not, some poetry is messy and that's okay, but often a poem lets us, offers us a touchstone for a particular feeling that we didn't really even know we were feeling until we read the poem. My colleague, Anthony Baker, has a beautiful essay in the Anglican Theological Review about 10 years ago now. And he talks about the difference between poetry and theology in this essay. And one of the claims he makes is that poetry reveals truths that are no less true for not having existed a moment before. So I love that. Poetry calls into being a feeling or a prayer or an awareness that has never been called into being in precisely that way. And it allows us, because it's expressed in language, to carry it with us, to ponder it, to contemplate it, to be present to it, and to return to it again and again. So poetry, yes, it belongs in church, and I'm glad that you all, oh yes, another thought? Yes, absolutely, thank you. I think the Psalms, in their range of registers and tones, some are psalms of lament, some are psalms of rejoicing, some are psalms of girding our loins for battle. All of the range of human emotions that we feel are present in the Psalms, and I think as a collection, they remind us that no type of human expression, no matter how emotionally charged, is received as precious articulations of our being by the God we worship. God's ears are open, God's heart is open to everything that we can dig up and throw at God's feet in language. And sometimes they're raw enough and they're poetic enough to remind us that there is a place in language for the expression of even our hardest feelings. Kate Bowler comes to mind as somebody. I don't know if you follow her. She's a professor at I thought she was at Vanderbilt now, but maybe she's Duke. Okay, thank you. She talks about the difficulties of life and how we can express those in our blessings. And the Psalms help us do that, as does Much poetry. So I want to move us along because I know we only have an hour. We could talk about this all day long, but I really want to kind of get our minds off the content and back into the writing in just a minute. But this is, I love this. Ascension Sunday is coming up, I think, in a couple of weeks. I'm looking at our clergy who's present, maybe or 2 weeks from now. I'm not sure exactly when. But this painting from the Renaissance period by the German artist Hans von Kulmbach is a representation of the Ascension. And it's almost comical, Jesus getting vacuumed up into the heavens, and there we see his feet, his very white feet. Everybody is white in this picture, which is says a lot to us about our own. Hi, Carol. Come on in. Slip in. Oh, sorry. Don't you hate it when that happens? but the feet are ascending, and all of the folks, the disciples and other apostles who are gathered, apostles and other disciples who are gathered are looking up at the feet. And it's, to me, a wonderful representation of kind of how we orient ourselves often theologically. We're often looking upward, and we're often imagining that the divinities reside in the clouds. And we've been told this through our theologies and through our art, especially. This should be Leonardo. Leonardo Boff is a Brazilian liberation theologian, and he has written about the movement of the spirit throughout the ages to wake us back up to the work of justice and the work of creativity. And he is writing in the early 21st century, a good 3 decades after Vatican II and the renewal of the church that came along with that moment. But he says, and I'm not going to read all of it, but his conclusion here, he's talking about all of the distractions that we have, violence and technology in our world. And he says, despite the modernization and the renewal that came in the late 20th century that moved through the church, the prevailing style in the church is still doctrinal, ritualistic, and he doesn't mean that in the lovely sense that we were just discussing it, but he means kind of almost fixated on the ritual, elevating the ritual over the experience of the ritual, and excessively cerebral, leaving little room for bodily expression and creativity. And so it's our work as people of the spirit to continue to help the spirit renew itself by allowing ourselves to be renewed and to express what we believe through our bodies and through our creativity. And to perhaps turn our gaze away from the heavens and to reintroduce ourselves to the goodness of the earth. And so that sort of begins to answer my question, why poetry in church? So what the poets do is they redirect our gaze. And St. Francis was one of our most emphatic practitioners of the downward gaze. And this lovely, I stole this from Richard Rohr's, both of these artworks from one of his morning meditations this week. But he points out that in this bronze statue, which is in the Basilica of Assisi in Italy, Francis is gazing worshipfully at the soil. He's finding God at his feet and beneath his knees. And this is what the poets do. And here is The Summer Day, the poem by Mary Oliver that we all know, that we've heard in classes like this 1,000 times, maybe or maybe not, since it was published in 1998. And I'll read it to you, and then I'll ask you a question. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out on the grass. The one who is eating sugar out of my hand. Who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down. Who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Why do you think it is that we keep encountering this poem everywhere we turn, in classes like this, or in magazines we open, or in our news feed, depending on what groups you follow? But why do you think this poem has caught our attention?
We need it. We need it bad.
Why do we need it? What do we need about it?
We need to connect with the other and with the world.
Yeah. We really do. We have a sense that we're moving in that direction and trying to reconnect with the earth. And let's hope that we can do it quickly enough that it makes a difference. But we need it badly. We need to remember that God and that divine presence and the energy that we need to sustain us in all of the different kinds of work in the world comes from the earth, and that we're standing on holy ground. This is what the poets remind us. They remind us that God isn't necessarily, although God is also, out in the cosmos. God is under our feet. Okay, so what I would like to do now is to invite you to take up your notepad once again. And I'm going to invite you into an experience, and do as much of it as you feel comfortable doing. And if at any point you want to just check out mentally or move yourself physically, that's fine. Anything goes. But I'm going to ask you to do something that's a little bit unconventional. I'm going to ask you to, first of all, make sure you're in a seat where you feel like you've got some psychic space. So if you want to move to the back of the room, there are some chairs back there, you can do that. If you want to move where you're just have nobody on either side, you can do that. You can stay exactly where you are. But I just am going to be taking you through a sort of a guided meditation, and I want you to be able to feel comfortable. And I'm also going to be asking you, well, I'll wait and ask you what I'm going to ask you when I ask you, but just be prepared to be asked to do something that's a little bit odd, and feel free to not do it. It's not really odd. I'm glad I'm building it up, because now when it comes, you're going to be like, that's not odd. I do that all the time. Okay, so I'd like you to get comfortable. And that might look like uncrossing your legs. It might look like you're actually not going to need your journal immediately. That's going to be in a couple of minutes, so you can kind of set that aside. Just make sure you are in a comfortable position. And this is the weird thing. If you feel comfortable doing it, and I'll do it too, take off your shoes. And just spend a moment. This is a lovely, cool tile floor. Just spend a moment letting your feet get used to the floor underneath. And maybe wiggle your toes. Maybe arch your feet, scrunch them up, relax them. And then just let your feet rest on the floor, both soles of feet of your feet on your floors, if on the floor. If you've got your shoes still on, that's fine too. Just leave them on the floor as well. Let your arms do whatever they feel like doing comfortably. Try to invite your entire body to be open, and then just let it do what follows. Make sure your clothes aren't bunched up, and that you're kind of balanced and loose. And also make sure to shift your weight in the chair to make it evenly balanced. And invite your spine to straighten if it's not straightened, and kind of open up your chest. And then if you feel comfortable doing so, you can let your eyes relax, and you can close them if you're comfortable doing that, or just drop your gaze to the middle distance. And then just return your attention to your feet. Just let the eye of your mind rest on your feet. Just feel the point of contact between the soles of your feet and the floor. And then begin to focus on your breath. Just notice how you're drawing breath in and out without needing to change it. Just observe your breath, taking in the shared air of the space and then releasing it back. Now notice the whole of your body resting in this chair. Notice your back and your seat and your legs. And notice how, as you're breathing, there are slight changes in how your body makes contact with the chair, with the seat of the chair and the back of the chair. Notice how the pressure points grow heavier when you inhale and then lighter when you exhale. Just breathe for a moment. Get a sense of the place of your relationship to the chair and the floor. And if you notice any tension in your body, focus on it for just a moment. Thank it for the work that it's doing for you this morning. And then maybe on your next exhale, let that tension go. As you feel the tension leaving your body, notice how strong and clear you're beginning to feel internally. Notice how, as you release that tension, you sink a little more deeply into your chair, which almost seems to sink more deeply into the floor and the ground below. And now, in your imagination, sink down through the floor and the ground beneath the building. Let your imagination take you into the soil below the building and the rock below that, and the entire planet falling away from us on all sides for unfathomable distances. And here you are at the top of the arc of the planet, and you feel yourself rooted in this place, almost as if you are becoming the trunk of a great towering oak tree. And now from the bottom of your spine, it's making contact with the chair. Feel your roots descending through the chair and the floor and the ground and into the earth beneath you. Feel those roots spreading deeper and deeper into the rich, dark earth, deep into the core of the planet. And as your roots descend into the earth, feel yourself joined to the earth and to all that it contains. Smell the moistness of the soil. Feel its soft coolness. Feel the nutrients that surround and nourish your roots. And feel the earth's great powers of life moving up through your roots and into your spine and your body, just as those powers are constantly moving up into the trunks of trees all around us. Feel that energy flowing through your body, opening your heart and filling you with strength, and power, and creative energy. Notice that you are connecting earth with spirit. You are connecting what is below to what is above. Allow yourself to feel this divine connection and you as the conduit, earth to spirit, spirit to earth. Now take one deep inward breath, and as you release it, at the same time, release the energy that you've received up from the earth. Release it back to where it came from. Give thanks for this energy and feel it flowing back down your spinal column and into the floor and the ground and the earth below. Begin to draw your roots back up from Mother Earth. Feel them curling up and resting at the base of your spine. And then when you're ready, begin to loosen your body a little bit. Move it very gently. You might roll your head very gently from side to side. Like rotate your shoulders, and when you're ready, open your eyes. Raise your awareness back to this space. And then, when you feel ready, return to your notepad. Activate your muscles, your writing muscles, and I would invite you to write once again for 3 or 4 minutes about where you are. And write in any way that feels natural to you. If drawing or doodling feels more appropriate, do that. Just write about where you are in any way that feels right to you. And now I would like you to do a little bit of a before and after analysis. Take a look at what you wrote at the top of the hour when I invited you to write about where you were. And then take a look at what you wrote just now. And I want you to think about or notice a couple of different things. Your handwriting, the way the written word looks on the page, the kinds of words you used, your vocabulary, and what you wrote about, where you said you were. Just take a minute to do that quietly. Jot down a note or two if you make any observations. Hey, what did y'all notice, if anything? Anyone want to be the brave first person back from the beyond? Yes, ma'am.
The second one was more hopeful.
Oh.
The first one was a little bit more down, and yeah. The second one was more stretched out. But it kind of ended on the same note in a way.
Interesting. Weird, mm-hmm. Mm. Well, that's, yeah. A clue that might be something that you're trying to communicate with yourself if it shows up more than once. So thank you. Hopeful. That's a new one. I've done this exercise with a few different groups and heard different kinds of responses, but hopeful is good. We like hope. Anyone else notice anything? Yes, ma'am.
The first one was very much more formal with complete sentences. The last second one was much looser. The first one was much more cerebral.
Yeah.
Second one was much more bodily focused and present.
Yeah, good.
And the first one had logical progression, and the second one was circular.
Interesting. So one of the things that happens when we ground, and that's to be expected. In the first writing sample, you walked into a classroom, there was a teacher, she told you to write. You were like, oh my God, I've got to write am I going to have to share it? Do I have to show it with my neighbor? Like all of the classroom phobias roll out and we stay very much in our heads. Often when I do this exercise, I have people lie on the ground, and that's a really powerful way to do what you all did a version of, which is to access your parasympathetic nervous system. That's the rest and reflect nervous system. It's the other one from the one that was operative when I was like, sit down, welcome, write for 5 minutes. That was your sympathetic nervous system taking up pen and paper and doing as you were asked. And it was probably coming out of a place of anxiety, even if you didn't realize it, a little bit of that sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight nervous system, was engaged. So you were answering the question. You were probably wondering, what does she mean? Where am I? Like, I wish she would give me more information. So there was maybe a little bit of defensive energy, but you're exactly right. That's the logical mind. That's the prefrontal cortex that's engaged. And when we practice grounding before we attempt to express something in the world, we're accessing our connective energy, and we're accessing our really the earliest kinds of brain activity we engage when we were toddlers. When we were little and we were learning about the world, we were on the ground all the time. We would learn that that's a coffee table by rolling toward it and banging into it. And logic had not yet, we had not yet ascended into our logical minds. Remember the image of the ascension? That's where we're stuck with a lot of our work in the world and with our faith life too. Grounding gets us back down to our primary learning mode, which is sensory and which is embodied and which is relaxed and playful. And it subverts the narratives that we take into situations like this. It's a church workshop, I need to perform. It subverts the narratives we take. If you're a writer, and I know there are a couple of poets in the room, and I would love in some other conversation to hear what your creative process is, but it subverts the anxiety that we get if we experience writer's block and we sit down in front of that blank page. A quick grounding practice can help us get under that cerebral prefrontal cortex story that I'm not good enough. I don't have anything to say. I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm an imposter. And every artist, even the most award-winning writer or artist, goes through that moment. And this can help us get under it and return to our bodies and let The world wants our illogical thoughts, actually, not our beautifully curated sequences of events, the impressions. That's what the impressionist painters learned. The eye is hungry for those bursts of light. Was there somebody over here who wanted to share about their experience? Yes.
Oh, I just want to, I noticed the difference that it's very external.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for naming exactly that. And I have that in my notes. Like two things happen when we do a grounding practice. And that is the first. It reorients us from the external world to the internal landscape. And that's where our wisdom is for writing poetry or for creating art. It's in there. And it's in there, and it wants to meet the out there. And the second thing that happens when we practice grounding is that our neural pathways blossom in new patterns, and they sensitize the brain and the body in new ways to what is outward, so that our senses are opened up. Did anybody write about the external space differently in the second? Did you do a little?
Well, one thing I noticed is in the second one, I was like, oh, you don't have to stay in ruts. You don't have to stay, that's part of what I wrote. It was like, you can, going here, you can get outside of ruts and rigid routine. I wrote that.
That's amazing, because that is actually, you're describing what was happening in your brain. Like there were new pathways getting laid down, and that you translated that into a cognitive like thought is really pretty cool, because that's, yeah, you can go outside of the box. Yes, sir.
First one that I don't know about is initiatives to accomplish.
Initiatives to accomplish. I love it. I love it. That's like textbook perfect.
To befriend?
Oh my goodness. So you have articulated a third effect of grounding, which was not in my notes, and that is that it positions us to be relational. It positions us to know ourselves so that we can, through these new awarenesses and attunements, become more in touch, not just with the world, but with one another. And we can befriend the inanimate world, but befriending what's around us. What a beautiful spirit of the spirit of Earth Day is what you are naming. So thank you. Any other, I know y'all have worship to do and things like that in a few minutes. Are there any other thoughts about comparing? Did anyone notice handwriting differences?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
yes. It really does. And, you know, that's kind of an obvious thing to observe and to ask. But remember, if you're a writer, especially, that our primary writing utensil is our body. That's a fact that we often forget in this day and age. And allowing ourselves to be grounded allows that ourselves to be more of a conduit, a physical conduit between that interior life and the page, which is where we want our wisdom to land so that we can share it with those we befriend. So thank you for noting that. I'm going to wrap up there, but I'll hang out for a few minutes if anybody has any questions. Thank you so much I will draw your attention to the art. I think this is spatially speaking, image by, I always get her name wrong, Sister Ansgar Holmberg, who is not German. She's an American Sister of St. Joseph. I think this is just a beautiful, iconic representation of all the biblical themes, from creation, and the two figures at the bottom are Adam and Eve, through the root of Jesse to Mary and her beloved child, Jesus, in an ascension that stays rooted, and an ascension that celebrates the connection of hand to body and the light that can come through it, and that connects us to our own deep history in the world around us. So maybe you can carry that image with you through Ascension Sunday. I can have the slides and the art available maybe through Mona if you're interested in capturing the images. But thank you all for being here, and I wish you a beautiful remainder of Poetry Month and a beautiful Sabbath as well. So thank you. Put your shoes back on before you leave. Although I sometimes have dreams about being in church without my shoes. That's a whole other topic too. That's true. I haven't had that one.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.